Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 64. And Dave and I certainly wish all our listeners, hope you had a wonderful Merry Christmas and happy holiday season. And boy, the Steelers made it easy for all of us. And Dave, not a perfect game, but pretty darn close. A 34-6 kind of walkover over the Houston Texans, a game that really, from the get-go, was never in doubt. And it's the irony of the, you know, what makes our job more interesting is more interesting games, and we beg for the easy ones. And boy, they made it easy for all of us yesterday.
Yeah, it's you know, I guess really, I mean, maybe outside of, well, even the first game against the Browns this year was a little.
Had its moments at the end.
Yeah, had its moments there, I think, there. But, obviously 21-18 was that final score there. It was nice to sit back on a Christmas and actually, you know, kind of know right from the get-go this thing against the Texans wasn't in doubt. And, you know, you could kind of feel that coming ahead of time. Their offensive line was talking about the Texans, their offensive line was really, really makeshift due to injuries. And, of course, they're on their number three quarterback in Yates. And even he had to leave the game briefly with you know, concussion-like symptoms. And their number four quarterback in the game. And, you know, outside, and we'll talk about some of the things the Steelers obviously could have done better in the game, like, you know, playing against the run. But, you know, it was good to see the offense click without Antonio Brown on the field. It was good to see the offense get a few more guys involved on that side of the football as well. And we got to see the defense do a couple of things that we really haven't seen done throughout the season as well. So, yeah, top to bottom. Look, it was a good win. It was a needed win. The Steelers now have a first-round bye, you know, in the playoffs, and you know, we'll see what happens in this. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this aren't expecting anything major or a miracle to happen in Week 17 in regard to the Patriots and the Jets, but you know, stranger things have happened.
Right, got to play the games, and you know, the Steelers are kind of where we thought they were would be at the beginning of the season. Again, I can't remember if we both picked them at 13-3 or 12-4, but right around this level. They'll go into the Cleveland game at home next weekend. You know, 12-3. They've won the division. They've gotten the bye. They've done everything that Mike Tomlin, that Art Rooney, that the team itself could have hoped for, except you know that last second they couldn't get the victory against New England. And you know, look, it could be incredibly significant, but still, you know, both teams are going to have to do work to get to that point, and it doesn't mean it's a fait accompli, but this season has gone almost exactly like the roadmap had planned from the very beginning. But, of course, there have been all sorts of stories along the way. We've talked about this, maybe as far as Dave and I in the 8 years we've been doing this, this may be the season that's had the most kind of off-the-field drama, and whether that's injuries, suspensions, you know, various events that we never would have foreseen, like the anthem issues and a variety of other things. Well, something that Dave's been pointing to all year long, or at least for the second half of the year when it kind of came up that James Harrison wasn't having a role, came to fruition. We talked about it on Friday, and, you know, I suggested that it certainly could be possible, but it wouldn't be the likely move. And Dave again pointed to the fact that Harrison's played only 40 snaps all year. And Dave, the Steelers released James Harrison. We'll see kind of where this goes, and we'll talk about it. But I just, you know, again, David, something we talked about, I guess, let me ask you. I know you weren't surprised, But were you surprised? I mean, look, it's something we've covered, but at the end of the day, were you still surprised that he was the name who was let go Saturday?
It was. I'll put it to you this way. When a move is forthcoming that we think is going to happen, we normally kind of have cheat and prepare a post for it.
Sure.
You know, because it takes 3 minutes.
A few minutes to write it.
Yeah, yeah. And then as soon as something like that happens, you can hit publish and your work is done, you know. That way you're not, or at least in my case, that way you're not having to correct several misspellings in 300 words. And you can make sure it's grammatically correct and all like that. Mostly it's me that does that. I don't think Alex or Matthew or any of the other guys do that. But I did not have a post ready, you know, and I thought that deep down inside the move might end up being Gilbert for Matt Filer, but really I was intrigued if that was going to happen, because I promise you, David, and we talked about, I think we bet a frappe on this the other day, if Filer gets waived, he's going to get claimed. Okay, so I think, and you know, I might be wrong on this, but I think the Steelers, you have genuine interest in keeping Matt Filer around and possibly take him. You want to take him to at least training camp next year, because keep in mind they're probably going to lose Chris Hubbard, right? You know, who knows what's going to happen maybe with a guy like Ramon Foster during the offseason. Having a guy around like Filer who can play guard and play tackle for you, be a number six or seven offensive lineman for you, is value, okay? And we saw, he hasn't played much, but during the preseason, he showed us some things. And you know, I'm not saying that between now and the end of regular season in general that Filer might not be jettisoned, but I really, really think there's genuine interest there. And if you get past, look, you know, Antonio Brown's going to be sidelined for a little bit longer, so you're still going to need Justin Hunter around. There aren't many people on this 53-man roster you can cut right now. People say Daniel McCullers, but the Steelers have a long history of trying to keep six healthy defensive linemen around, because, heck, you could get off the bus and one of your guys trips and falls or what have you, or pregame warm-up injury, as rare as those are, those type of things can happen. And it's always nice to have kind of an ace in the hole, if you will. So, yes, I understand there are guys. I understand people are mad that they think the Steelers did James Harrison wrong and all like this. In short, I knew there was a possibility of it happening. I wasn't totally convinced that it was going to happen when it did on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, obviously we didn't know. I had assumed that with Foster practicing and going full, that he would clear concussion protocol. And I don't know that things would be any different if Ramon had cleared concussion protocol. But obviously something led to him not dressing for the game yesterday. So we'll just assume that he didn't fully clear it, or they didn't feel like it was a situation where they wanted to put him out there. And so maybe that made that moot. And I, you know, there's a David, I don't know exactly what discussions were held behind closed doors. Maybe there's a chance that that James Harrison and the Steelers are having a conversation today, and there'll be a roster move to bring him back. But I wouldn't think so. But then again, you know, maybe, again, Matt Filer's a guy. Cody Sensabaugh would be the other guy. We've talked about Dan. You know, you look at the roster construction, and we haven't talked hardly at all the whole year about who's on the practice squad. The interesting thing about Justin Hunter is the Steelers have two guys. Tucker's a guy that we talked about during the preseason, and Justin Thomas is a guy who's been back and forth off and on the practice squad. You have two receivers on the practice squad, but neither of those guys are even 6 feet tall. And, you know, we know the explicit reason for signing Hunter, who caught his first touchdown pass and his fourth catch of the year, was because he had some height. Ironically, the catch he passes in the red zone is, you know, on his ankles. So, you know, could they bring Harrison back? Did they have a handshake deal and say, look, we thought Foster would get through the protocol. We're going to do something different. But because he didn't, this is what we're going to do. Sure. But it was, I think the reaction was more muted from the fan base than I expected. I think everybody understands the reality of 40 snaps is 40 snaps, and zero special team snaps is zero special team snaps. And again, as we talked about almost from the very beginning, there's no Mike Tomlin is not the type of coach who's saving things for later. You try to win each game each Sunday. And for I think to some degree, we can all fairly ask or say we were all a bit confused as to how Harrison was used, getting the 15 or 17 snaps against the Chiefs and playing okay and then really not playing hardly at all after that. But it is what it is, and as Mike said after the game, that's football, and so, you know, that's where the Steelers are.
Muted. They were muted. Maybe you actually muted them.
I mean, that could be it.
Maybe you had maybe most of your followers you have muted now. It wasn't muted on my end. All I kept seeing is how could the Steelers do James Harrison so wrong after all he's done for this organization to cut him after 15 weeks of the blah 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 blah. Now he's gonna get picked up by the Patriots or the Ravens and used against the Steelers in the playoffs. Blah, blah, blah. Give me a break. I mean, look, I keep being accused of being a James Harrison hater. I don't hate James Harrison. It's just that the writing on with this has been on the wall all season. I've just been trying to educate people as to why you know, these kind of things have happened with him. They signed James Harrison before they drafted T.J. Watt, and they really had to do that because they did not know. You can't go into the draft not prepared because the draft can go 18,000 different ways. So I think it was clear really coming out of OTAs with how quickly T.J. Watt was picking things up, and then you get into the preseason and all. This was going to be T.J. Watt's show, and then a younger guy like Anthony Ciccolo was going to probably be his backup there. James Harrison does not play special teams. People want to keep pointing to Pro Football Focus and what they had James Harrison last year as far as coverage rating and all. Look, their coverage ratings, I love Pro Football Focus. I like to read Pro Football Focus and their ratings and all, but let's face it, a lot of their stuff, especially when it comes to coverage, it isn't on the money, I don't think, at times. And let's face it as well, too. James Harrison, what does he do in coverage a lot of times? He just zone drops, okay? We're not seeing him run with people downfield, so it's a little bit misleading. Sure, can James Harrison still play against the run pretty decent? I'm sure he can. We really haven't seen a whole – I mean, 40 snaps this year, we haven't seen a lot of that. Can James Harrison still get out after the passer for half of – 60 snaps a game? We don't really know that either. Obviously, he was turned loose in the game against the Kansas City Chiefs and put up against the guy that he's a kryptonite for in Fisher over there, and obviously had a big sack late in that game. The fact of the matter is, and James Harrison said a few weeks ago that had he known that he would have ended up being used the way he was used this season, he probably would not have re-signed with the Steelers. Now, is that just frustration talking? Maybe. But now he's free, okay? Now he's a free agent. By the way, he did clear waivers on Monday. Ask yourself this, David. If you're James Harrison, are you re-signing with the roster the way it is right now, knowing that you're going to go back to the team and you might not even dress? However, it will give you a chance to put on your resume that you have another Super Bowl championship potentially. Are you going to re-sign? It's not the money.
Re-sign with who?
The Steelers.
Re-sign with the Steelers? Of course. Look, he's got relationships with all the guys in the rooms. He's got room. He's gone through the season. If they ask him and had, a conversation about it, of course you're coming back. I mean, it's not a prideful – I don't think James Harrison's going to say, I did something for the team's benefit. Maybe that's what he did. I kept him a roster spot, and I let him keep Matt available for the game or whoever it was, and they want me back in the room. Yeah, of course I'm coming back. No question there.
Even after the things he said a few weeks ago?
Sure. I mean, you know, he can't go back and change what happened in August or September. I mean, I James Harrison has some. I'm sure he's frustrated and would like to have done more, but I don't think he hates the guys in the room, and I think he's a big boy. He's an adult. Maybe he takes his ball and goes home, and maybe more likely he doesn't have the option to do that. But I don't think he's going to be. I wouldn't think that he's going to, you know, pout about it.
Would you re-sign James Harrison? Today, tomorrow, this week?
Yeah, I would. It doesn't make any difference to me. I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking about it. I mean, James Harrison, Justin Hunter, Cody Sensabaugh, the 53rd guy on the roster. I mean, sure, it makes a little bit. It makes a marginal difference, but you know, and is it more likely that James Harrison could do something in the playoffs? I guess. I mean, I don't see Cody Sensabaugh now, you know, being a guy that they need necessarily to have around, but yeah. So the answer is it doesn't matter to me.
I wouldn't, but if injury strikes, obviously I would, because he's a guy that knows what's going on. I would not re-sign him right now just to make him a game inactive. To me,
all three guys are insurance policies. I mean, Hunter, Sensabaugh, you know, they were signed as insurance policies, as was James Harrison. So, you know, which one's not with the team? It's, again, which position's more likely to have an injury. All right, let's go on to the rest of the inactives. Anything surprise you? I guess Sensabaugh being down was the other thing. He was questionable, but the rest pretty straightforward.
Yeah, you know, I predicted Sensabaugh and Wilcox would be down. That ended up happening. I was a little bit surprised that Filer was chosen over Gerald Hawkins, but I understand why that was, and it's for the aspect of Filer is probably the better interior player between him and a guy like Hawkins, and obviously a guy like Chris Hubbard. Sure, Chris Hubbard has played all five spots before, but that doesn't mean that you want him playing all five spots. In short, had a guy like B.J. Finney gotten injured in that game last night, who was going to play left guard? I think the way I would understand that is Mike Tomlin and Mike Munchak would have rather seen a guy like Matt Filer play left guard instead of a guy like Chris Hubbard. So, you know, that's really the only thing there.
Yeah, and we saw it, you know, the last series that all, you know, we saw some guys get some work. Finney got a couple snaps at center, Filer got, you know, his snaps, and we saw Chris Hubbard get some snaps at left tackle as the last drive the Steelers rested Ben, Le'Veon Bell, and two of the offensive linemen. Okay, so let's get to the game. And, there is a lot to get to, and not to be negative Nelly on things, but let's talk about the one negative, and we've seen it rear its ugly head at times this year. And generally, the ironic thing is when it has happened this year, it's really pointed to the Steelers having an awful game. That wasn't the case, Dave, but the Steelers got gouged again in the run game, as you pointed out, and I pointed out on Friday, by an offensive line that is not good. I mean, this is and they showed in pass protection how bad they are, but they were able to create some holes, and Alfred Blue and Lamar Miller were able to find those holes and put up, you know, really robust numbers in the run game. And you can, if we were doing the Texans podcast, certainly we'd be starting our conversation with the Texans, ball at the 1 yard line, third and goal, and then throwing the ball twice and ended up having it intercepted by Artie Burns the second time. Is your concern about the run game that teams have been able to run on the Steelers and this is another one, or is it at all, you know, obviously one difference this time is no Ryan Shazier and Sean Spence in there. We've questioned some guys setting the edge the entire season, their ability to do it, their willingness to do it. Where do you go with the run game getting beat up defensively?
Yeah, there's definitely reason for concern there. I mean, even though, and I still have to let, I mean, I kind of reserve judgment on this until we get the all 22 tape so I can see exactly what happened, not only when it comes to run fills, but, you know, how the safeties were playing. I think the Steelers obviously went into this game saying, don't let Nuke Hopkins beat us. You know, take this guy away and we'll take our chances with whatever else that goes on. So did that mean a lot of two deep safeties in this game? Almost daring them to run against you? That seemed to maybe be the case, but even so, that like we've said, that offensive line was a mess going into this game. And Christ, Alfred Blue, 108 yards. come on. I mean, you just can't let that happen. They had between the two running backs, they had 26 total rushing attempts, and I think I calculated like, 11 or 12 of those were successful runs. They had like five or six over 10 yards, which definitely, skews the average yards per carry. And then, of course, you had the 48-yard run by Alfred Blue. And I knew immediately after that happened there were going to be some people on Twitter saying, oh, if only Mike Mitchell would have taken a better angle there. Folks, we'll look at the all 22 on this, but Mike Mitchell was in a deep, playing a deep middle of the field position, safety position in that game, and his job is to come down in there and fill that lane, okay? And when Joe Hayden failed to hold the edge on the outside, that's on Joe Hayden. You have to, in that situation, you have to assume your teammate's going to do his job. And that's
and in that run, Blue, you know, that was a between the tackles run that he busted outside after that. So he broke the line of scrimmage between the tackles and then was able to kick it outside. So that's, you know, it and we have been, I think, rightly so, critical of the safeties frequently in terms of the run support. But once he commits to between the tackles, Mitchell's going to come on an inside lane. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to be coming outside.
Right, and Hayden has got to look. You don't expect Hayden to make the tackle in that situation, but you do not let him get outside of you, and that's what happened. And when that happened, yeah, it makes Mike Mitchell look like he took a bad angle on the play. But that run has got, if that run's forced inside, maybe we're talking about a 15, 18 yard run. But once he got outside of Joe Hayden, then he was off to the races at that point for 48 yards. So it's little things like that. You turn around very next play, though, on the opposite side of the field. Joe Hayden comes up and makes a nice run tackle. You just have to be more concerned. We've seen Artie Burns have his issues on the other side, especially when it comes to like crack and replace type situations there, on outside runs. So that's one thing when you get into the playoffs with the Steelers defense that you need to be concerned about is how they play the run. And it wasn't just on the outside and the corners either. We saw guys like Blue and Miller get some nice yardage up the middle as well, too. And once again, we'll have to see what the all 22 says on that. But if there's one concerning thing about the play of the defense Monday against the Texans, it was how they played against the run.
Okay, so let's get to just the most interesting thing that happened in this game. And I will say with the holidays and everything, maybe I missed, maybe I missed this, but I didn't see this until after the game that Jacob Klinger reported that Cam Sutton had gotten some first team reps in front of Artie Burns, in place of Artie Burns. Now, I may have read that on Friday and just dismissed it and saying, look, you know, with Sensabaugh being dinged up and them not wanting maybe to work Hayden too hard in practice, it's not unusual just to give guys reps. But certainly what we saw in the game, in this game, was a little bit different. And we've talked about, the Steelers playing their cornerbacks a certain way all season long. And then, you know, to some degree, you know, I guess it happened a little last week, but really we saw something completely different this week in Joe Hayden following New Cockburns around. And I'll just tell you, my immediate reaction to this during the game and after the game has been, this is damning on Artie Burns. And the reason why, I mean, I don't know that it needs to be explained, but it's obvious. You got a guy who's been a very good corner in his career, and certainly a decent corner for the Steelers this year. You know, nobody talked about putting Joe Hayden in the Pro Bowl, but he's played reasonably well. But he's coming off, you know, missing six or seven games and having a limited week of practice going into the Patriots game and a more full week of practice going into this game. And if you believe, you know, how the stories were written, this was not something the Steelers decided to do until Saturday afternoon in the walkthrough before they flew to Houston. And then they implement something they haven't. Now, we're not asking Joe Hayden to, you know, reinvent the wheel here. He's going to play on one side or the other side. So I'm not overly concerned about the practice aspect of things. But to say, to, you know, one of the top three or four receivers in the NFL, you're going to get him because we're not comfortable doing what we've done all year about having you on one side and already on the other. That speaks massively, Dave, to me about the Steelers' confidence level in Artie Burns dealing with a top flight receiver.
Well, you didn't just do it just to see if you could do it.
No, that's for damn sure. They don't do anything like that.
So you did it because there was a reason that you did it. And it is a little damning on Artie Burns. And let's face it. And look, people will take you getting on a player as that means cut him, throw him away. No, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater just yet, especially with a former first-round draft pick. But, you know, going all the way back to his film study when he was at Miami, David, he is a bump-and-run corner, best talking about Burns, best suited probably to play in man-to-man situations, not an overly physical cornerback, can make plays. We saw him make plays. What, he have six or something interceptions during his last season at Miami? But a guy that's really was still incredibly raw, okay? A guy that you hadn't seen. They pulled him off the field in quite a bit of peculiar situations during that last season at Miami. And now we've had some time to evaluate him in the NFL. We still know that he's incredibly raw, I think, technique-wise. I question his football IQ. And that's not a knock on him, too. Remember, this is a kid that ran, that did track during the offseason, right? You know, so wasn't around, the football X's and O's and the whiteboards a lot during his offseason at Miami. We've seen him blow a lot of coverages.
He's absolutely a guy who will bite and look to cheat a little bit and, you know, gets caught looking in the backfield way more than you would like.
And, you know, a guy that we've talked about has had some issues against the run. I initially graded Artie Burns as a second. I thought he was a second round corner. Okay. He's playing so far like a second. He's a height, weight, size, you know, height, weight, speed guy right now. He has not played like a first round cornerback yet. And now he's starting to be treated like a number two cornerback on a team, right? You know,
yeah, absolutely was this week. No doubt that they. It's amazing. You got Hayden coming off 6 weeks of not playing, and you know all that time not practicing, and you're just gonna, you know, you're gonna trust him with Nuke because you think he's gonna be significantly better than your other guy dealing with this receiver. That's a, you know, speaks volumes to me.
Now, obviously, there when this gets, look, he Artie's still got some time to get better here. Will he? You know, I don't know. We'll see how the Steelers treat these guys moving forward on into the playoffs and whatnot. And then obviously hope that you know, during the offseason, maybe Artie can take another step in the right. Oh, don't forget this, too. I forgot to add this one when knocking Artie Burns. He leads the team in penalties again. And, boy, he's had a lot of the last few weeks when it comes to pass interference as well, too. So
10 on the season, I think, is the number. Did get an interception yesterday.
And that was a good one. I mean, ill-advised throw, but, I mean, you got to make the play.
Yep. And, again, I will just say the – just kind of – again, I don't want to overstate this, but reading that Cam Sutton was taking reps from him with the first team, you know, making sure – look, it's good to be prepared. It's good to make sure Cam Sutton can play both sides because, you know – but it wasn't okay, it's Tuesday, we're going to have Joe Hayden follow Nuke around, so let's make sure Cam can play both sides. Remember, they didn't do this till Saturday, and yet Sutton was taking reps on the other side. So, you know, look, I don't think Cam Sutton's going to get a start in front of Artie Burns here this year or, you know, anything along those lines. But, man, if I were Artie Burns, I would be deep in my playbook and really on my P's and Q's in practice this week because that is not complimentary stuff. In terms of what the Steelers decided to do. And it's probably the most interesting thing, maybe tactically, we've seen the entire season that's not been injury-based. Here we are, week 16. This is, it was a fundamental shift. They played plenty of great receivers this year. You know, you start with A.J. Green and go down the list of guys who are really top-flight guys and, you know, questioning us bringing up, you know, are the Steelers going to do anything differently? And we don't even talk about it anymore because it was just a given. This is how the Steelers play their corners. But it wasn't how the Steelers played their corners yesterday. So that is something to watch. You think about who they're going to get in the playoffs. You know, if it's Jacksonville, there's not necessarily a receiver that you're going to think that you want to adjust your defense with. Tyreek Hill's a different animal with the Chiefs. You think about the Ravens, you know, is Mike Wallace somebody that you probably, you know, probably not necessarily you do that with. So, you know, you're not, maybe you don't see a guy again that you have to make those types of decisions with. But I thought it was really interesting stuff yesterday.
You can also look at what happened last week with Cameron Sutton another way. You could look at it as, okay, we probably not going to be able to dress Cody Sensabaugh for one reason or another. A, injury. B, numbers. Okay? So assuming that's going to ultimately happen, let's get Cameron Sutton some reps at both positions.
Absolutely. Because, next man up.
Because he might be the next man up. So you can look at that as well. I tell you, I hate to look too far ahead to the game against the Browns, but who are you putting on Josh Gordon?
It'll be interesting. Josh Gordon, you know, had that the first game back was did some good stuff and really hasn't since. And Kaiser's been a disaster. So I don't know. I don't know if you would alter. Now it's not really altering. I don't know what you do with the Browns in terms of if you worry about Gordon or not.
I think I want Joe Hayden sharp as a tack come playoff time. I'm putting and look, he ought to know all about even though Josh Gordon's missed some time there, he ought to know all about going up against Josh Gordon, what he does well and what he doesn't do well. So I'm having Joe Hayden follow Josh Gordon around in week 17.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I hope. Today, obviously, we're going to have press conferences today, and we'll discuss those tomorrow. But I hope somebody asked Mike about the defensive alignment and what spurred that on and take it a little deeper and see if he's willing to say anything complimentary about Hayden or negative about Artie Burns in the process. So, okay, so, Dave, you know, that's a little bit the negative and interesting stuff. Let's get to all the good stuff. Let's just stay on the defensive side. I'm not going to say it was a Mike Hilton coming out party because we've been talking about him from the beginning. He's made his mark. His explosiveness off the edge in the blitz game is unique to, I think, anybody we've seen in the last 10 years with the Steelers. Certainly more explosive than William Gay, who did some of that, or some of the other DBs that we've seen come in there and did something historic, at least since 1982, if the NFL research that I saw was right. First cornerback with three sacks in a game. He's the Steelers' third defensive back with three sacks in a game. And I think maybe the first guy since Harrison or somebody a couple of years ago. We talked about James's three-sack fourth quarter against the Colts a few years back. But, David, if you were voting, if you were ranking guys on defense, not necessarily most important, but, you know, giving out kind of the MVP award, and you had to rank three guys – let's throw Ryan Shazier out of the conversation. I think most people are going to be jumping on the Cam train. Could you make an argument for Mike Hilton being second?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think he can. I mean, he's had some nice pass breakups this year. You know, obviously the sacks and the pressure. You know, not just the sacks, but the pressures off the edge as well. So, you know, a lot of times where people want to measure things by things that they can touch, like a sack number. But you know, that's not the end all do all, as we keep saying all the time. You know, it's pressure, moving a quarterback off the spot, making them pull the ball down, or making them get rid of the ball too early. He's been all that. We've seen some good blitzing defensive backs over the years for the Steelers, you know, but he's able to finish, or at least has, most definitely did in that game against the Texans. I think he has now, what, 4 sacks on the season there. But he...
Six tackles for loss. He had another tackle at the line of scrimmage. You know, look, so, you know, they run plays away from, you know, when he's coming off the edge, but they seem to be, you know, willing to send him. And I dismissed Mike Hilton the first couple of weeks of the preseason before we got into the games. I was just like, you know, there's no room at the end, and it's hard to believe that he would, even though Sanquez Golson has done nothing. The Steelers saw both these guys at Ole Miss and whatever. And, man, when I said something complimentary about Hilton on Twitter yesterday, the Rebs fans were out in force praising Mike Hilton. And look, the guy's been a big find. And Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but was he not on the Patriots practice squad for a week? You know, he had a cup of coffee with the Patriots.
Yeah, he did have a cup of coffee with the Patriots and all. Sure did. So
So hey, one who got away from Bill Belichick, a guy who's been, you know, really, really look. Vince Williams, I think, is, as Dave mentions, played in space better than maybe we thought coming into the year. And has to, and I, look, I'm not knocking Tuitt or Hargrave or anybody else, but just there's no question on the Steelers roster. Mike Hilton has been a disproportionate surprise. I mean, you can't talk about Watt or Juju as being surprised as when you get the pedigree that they have. Mike Hilton's a nobody. He's a street free agent who was bouncing around, and he has been a find. So good game for him. Why don't you lead us off on the offense? What caught your eye other than, you know, almost all of it good?
Well, Vance McDonald is a guy that will make you pull your hair out, right? I mean, a guy that you love one week and then you're mad at the next week because he can't get on the field. Kind of a love-hate relationship with him. When he's out there, David, it is noticeable. When he's out there and he's healthy, He is noticeable, not only as a blocker, but his ability to get down the field and make some plays. And we saw that especially early in that game against the Texans. And, you know, I think that's huge. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Jesse, because Jesse's had some good games this year. But Jesse is not Vance McDonald all the way around. McDonald's a better blocker. He can get, you know, he can even that first catch of his, or either first or second catch of his. You know, everybody's covered, and Vance works his way back to the middle of the field, and Ben's able to hit him there. You know, I thought that was probably one of the most noticeable things about that game on Monday was, oh, yeah, there's number 89, Vance McDonald's back. So now hopefully he can stay healthy. The second thing is, I think that struck me was, man, Le'Veon Bell sure certainly does run better outside the tackles. You know, not that we didn't need that game to confirm it, but much better out outside of the guards than he is inside the guards there. And the other thing, and this caught me by surprise, Ridley being the next guy up behind Le'Veon Bell in that game caught me by surprise. I was glad to see Ben take some shots down the field. Good to see Martavis get one down the right side and Juju get one down the left side. And as if we needed any confirmation, Juju should be your rookie of the year.
Yeah, a lot there. Let's first of all, working a little bit backwards, Ridley, I'm with you on that. I mean, you know, I mentioned this as soon as Ridley got his second carry, and everybody's like, "Well, Fitz, you know, I got a lot of Fitz sucks and whatever." Fitz Toussaint's been around. He's been, he's had productive games for the Steelers. I know people will remember the fumble in Denver, but he was good in the playoffs that year, and he's been around. Now, it tells you a couple things. One is it tells you how hard it is to learn the running back position. Now, Stephen Ridley's a veteran, of course, but, you know, when people talk about, well, he needs time to learn this, you know, give the guy the ball and let him go. So that's what they were willing to do with that with Stephen Ridley. And I forget which beat writer discussed this with Tomlin, but he said, you know, why Ridley? But certainly, as Dave pointed out during the week, that they had Watson on the inactive list. Ridley's a different type of player, but there's certainly other guys out there. And he said, look, went down to the LSU Pro Day. Every year I go down there, and Ridley's the guy that we met during the Pro Day. We were interested in him. And then he went on to say, this is where the guy works out. So I see him almost every year. And he said, I put it in the back of my mind that this is a guy, if we had the chance to work together, we might like the opportunity. The opportunity availed itself. And so the Steelers did. And they weren't hesitant to throw him in there. And just for perspective, I mean, you know, James Conner down with the injury. I think James Conner has 32 carries or, 30-ish carries on the season. Stephen Ridley's now fourth in rushing attempts for the Steelers. He had 9 carries yesterday. Watson, I think, had, 5 on the year. Fitz only has 1. So, right. It was a game situation the Steelers haven't seen much of, so certainly that played a little bit of it. But Ridley was in there when it wasn't 34-6 as well. So, yeah, good point there. I do agree with you on the rookie of the year, and I know somebody said it in your timeline, Dave. Mike Hilton's not a rookie, so he's not an eligible guy. There are not a ton of guys in the conversation, Juju or T.J. Watt, and I think probably everybody would have given it to T.J. Watt after week one. But no doubt T.J. Watt's had a fine season, but Juju's probably surpassed him with what he's done in the second half of the season. Another good game for him yesterday, did a lot of good stuff. You see him make the catch down the right sideline or the left sideline where it's a bit, combative, and he's got to contort his body, did a nice job there, did a great job on the touchdown, just making it an easy pitch and catch over the middle. You wonder, again, looking at it from the other guy's perspective, our man, Mike Vrabel, the defensive coordinator, has just got to be pulling his hair out when you see a guy just, waltz into the end zone like that from 18 yards out. Justin Hunter makes a play, gets a touchdown catch with Vance. You're right on Vance. How about him? 4 catches in the Steelers' first, 10 plays? And then only one other, just one other target the rest of the way. And what else? Martavis Bryant, 3 catches, 60 yards, makes that catch, toe drag on the right sideline, a pass that we've seen AB catch all season long. They got that one too. So it was easy pickings for the offense. And I threw a stat out where we're doing the podcast over the last 6 weeks, massively improved, now second in the league in third down conversion percentage, 44.7%. They're 63% in the last 3 games. And, that's against solid competition, big games. Against the Ravens, against the Patriots, obviously not so much the Texans, but in those games now averaging more than 30 points a game over the last 3 weeks, the Steelers offense is where you would want it to be. Even without AB here in this game, the Steelers offense is going into the playoffs. Assuming AB gets healthy, and we've heard a lot of different reports over the last 48 hours that it wasn't a torn muscle, it's a strain or a bruise or a contusion, and things appear, better than they felt like 5 days ago.
Yeah, and I think another thing that stuck out in that game, I was just replaying it in my head there. I think in the second quarter or second half it was, we saw 2 tremendous effort plays by Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant after catches, be able to get third downs.
Good point.
And you just talked about third downs as well, too. And it's little things like that during the game that keeps drives alive that end up in some sort of points. And I think those 2 plays both. And look, that play by Martavis, I would have bet you money he was going to be dead to right. There were like 3 guys on him, I think. And the fact that he was able to break loose and then extend and get the first down was pretty spectacular. Then, maybe not so spectacular the play that Le'Veon Bell made. I forget if it was either before or after that play there. But going back to third downs, it just seems like, I have to go back and look at the numbers, it looks like they're staying in more manageable situations here. The third and fours, the third and fives, the third and threes. Even the deep ball to Martavis was a third and three. Am I correct? And that's a situation, how many times we said, man, if Ben, I don't care the down or distance, if Ben can get Martavis singled up on the outside with the single high, he's going to go after it, and he did, and that ball's dropped right in the bucket, and Martavis, got good separation at the end there, and then, of course, got both feet down there. So, yeah, the offense is clicking just the way you would like to see it. You'd probably like to see them be able to run the ball a little bit better still, David, I think, more effectively on a down-by-down basis. Especially in the middle of the line, and look, for all the praising that we just did, a little bit of Ridley, 3.1 yards per carry. You know, there I haven't looked at his successful run rate, but it probably wasn't high.
I didn't think he showed us anything yesterday.
And you know, one thing that I haven't looked at either, I'll look at in the all 22. I'm not sure how many passing plays he was in there on that he had to pass protect. And if there's one thing that Toussaint does well, that's pass protect. So maybe this is just, hey, let's get Ridley up to speed as much as possible. It's hard to imagine just yet, and I mean, it's possible that you get into a situation where Le'Veon Bell has to come off the field for one reason or the other, and it's a passing situation. Yeah, I'm not sure I want Ridley out there just yet, you know. So that, yep. Maybe they're trying to kind of work through that as well too. It was good to see. Look, Le'Veon Bell now over 400 touches on the season. Anytime you can get him off the field for play here, you might not seem like much, but it is when it comes to trying to keep the mileage relatively lower on him. But you know, top to bottom, the offense. Not bad. I thought Ben once again made some great throws in that game against the Texans, and you would expect this team now against the Browns, David. You have to play to win, right? I mean, you can't. You know, everybody tweeting, well, that, you know, the Patriots aren't gonna lose to the Jets. That's your. Everybody's probably right, but you just can't assume something like that's gonna happen. I think you go out. You got to start your starters. You got to play like you're going to play the game to win, like it matters, and then kind of watch the scoreboard into the second half. And if it looks like the Patriots are blowing out the Jets, then maybe start pulling guys out of the game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think, and if it didn't matter, I would suggest playing none of them. But I think, you know, you're going at least the first half and most likely most of the game with your starters out there. And if you get a 20-point cushion or – I mean, that's about what it's going to take. I just think Mike's going to play this like a regular game. And you just keep your fingers crossed. I'm saying it right up front here. No criticism from me if the starters play the whole game and if somebody gets hurt. That's, you know, as he says, that's football. There are times when I thought he's been too slow to not use guys, to get guys out of games. But I thought they did the right thing last night. You know, a series earlier, everybody's going to, you know, point to that. But it's fine. You got, you know, the guys out there saved them a couple snaps, but I think in this game they're gonna go and do what they got to do to win the game, and that means you're gonna play at least three quarters. So, I'm with you. I expect them to you know, play this like it's the week one. Go out and win the game and do what you got to do. Control what you can control, as he likes to say. I'd be even surprised if they're spending too much time watching the scoreboard, because unless that game New England and the Jets is 30 points one way or the other, I can't imagine it will impact much of what they do. A little bit of positives in the return game. Finally, Eli Rogers, who early in the game caught a ball on the 8-yard line, which he shouldn't have. He either shouldn't have caught it or he should have returned it, because he had a lot of space in front of him. So a small negative on that one. But then he did get three returns, kind of had a big day. The first kind of return, you know, punt return day that we've seen from the Steelers, well, maybe all season long. As he finished, let's see what his final numbers were here. Eli finished with five returns for 82 yards, so averaging 16 with a long of 27. I know you put something down that I think maybe that was the long of the year, Dave. And I was doing some research on the return game because Alex posted earlier in the week that the Steelers, I think, were 30th 30th and 32nd in kick and punt returns, and I might have them reversed, but obviously bottom of the barrel. So we saw something positive in the punt return game. In the kick return game, the Steelers didn't have any opportunities with a touchback and just kind of basically Grimble giving himself up. But I did go look, and the Steelers have their on the kick return game, Martavis Bryant had that 38-yarder up the sideline against Green Bay, the first time he got an opportunity to return a kick. The Steelers' second longest kick return this year, and this just falls in line with what we've seen the last 3 years, is 27 yards. So we at least had a little bit of positive in the punt return game yesterday.
Yeah, longest kickoff return, as you stated, Martavis Bryant. Juju has the second longest with 27. And then punt returns, the longest, I think, well.
Yesterday, yeah, Eli, 27.
Yeah, it was 27. I'm trying to remember what was the longest before that. I want to say it might have been Antonio Brown at 16, but maybe
yeah,
Eli.
I think it was 16, and I think Eli had a 16-yarder yesterday. So, I mean, yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, you know, that. Let me, you know, we haven't had a lot to crow about as far as special teams goes in years. And regardless of what happens now, between now and the rest of the year, you have to wonder, is this going to be it for Danny Smith? You know, Danny Smith had his heyday during some time with the Redskins and all like that. But, I mean, 27 long on a punt return and 38 long on a kickoff return. And if you just go back over the last several years, you need a little bit better than that, David. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Danny Smith. I still think there's something up between Ben and Todd Haley over the course of the last, I don't know, four or five games.
It keeps coming back when the stories keep coming back and people, you know, Caboli reported on it 4 weeks ago with Randy Fittner going down. I'm sure we mentioned this, but I don't know how much we talked about it. But for those who don't know, Randy Fittner came down from the booth to be on the sideline. Some viewed that as being a buffer between Ben and Todd Haley. CBS picked it up again and kind of re-reported it. It wasn't new news, but re-reported it this week. And, you know, people will take every opportunity to point when those two aren't talking on the sidelines. So, look, generally on these types of things, they aren't completely made up. So there's probably something there. But, again, in the course of the extended relationship those two guys have had, whatever it is now, 7, 8 years, 6 years, you know, these things, they can obviously still both perform their duties.
Yeah, they can, and you know, I'm not so worried about what's going to happen the rest of the season. I don't think, especially if you got Randy Fittner down there. But I think there's something to that. And as I said, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, Todd Hill has had a long shelf life when it comes to offensive coordinators in a league, right? I mean, for a guy to stay, he's been around since, what, 2012. So that's 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 6 years as an offensive coordinator, and especially being an offensive coordinator for the Steelers that long is a long time. I'm trying to remember, has Ben had a longer offensive coordinator? I mean, if so, it would have been Bruce Arians, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It was Arians. This is Ben's 14th year in the league, so do the math. Arians was there. He's only really had two, right? I mean, I can't remember who was his coordinator rookie year. Was it Arians?
It was Wiz.
Yeah, Ken Wisenhunt. So, you know, Arians was probably there 4 or 5 years, so give Wiz a couple years.
Right. Arians was the coordinator from 2007 to 2011. So that's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That's 5 seasons for Arians, right? And then 6 right now for Haley. And then that leaves the Wiz for how long was Wisenhunt there?
I don't know. Mike Tomlin's first year. Who was was Arians his coordinator for Mike's first year?
Yeah, 2007 is when Arians became coordinator. So
yeah,
so when
that whole coaching shuffle changed, that changed.
And Wiz was the coordinator 2004 to 2006. So three years there. So yeah, I guess what I'm getting at, for those of you that do hate Todd Haley, I wouldn't change just to change to bring in a guy off the street. I don't think, but when you got a guy like Randy Feitner there, who obviously right now probably does have a better relationship with Roethlisberger than Haley does, I think you could, and all this, of course, assumes Ben's coming back for another season, which I still would be shocked if that doesn't happen. I think you could see something happen with Haley not being around next year and Randy Feitner taking Ben the rest of the way through his career. Could you see that?
I wouldn't bet on it. I'm kind of 85-15. Certainly what happens the rest of the season may impact that a little bit. The offense is playing its best football for sure, and it's because Ben's playing his best football. Now, does that coincide at all with, you know, Feitler on the sidelines? I'd hate to think that something that minor is the difference for what we've seen with Ben, who's been so much better since, you know, the bye or the second half of the season or the last, you know, 6 weeks, whatever you want to call it. But he's been so much better. You wouldn't think a little tweak, and I think it is a little tweak. You wouldn't think a little tweak like that would make the difference, but it's certainly something we will speculate more about. And it's this is an offense that a lot is expected of, and let's give them some credit here. You know, talk about red zone conversions now. The Steelers have been very good of late. Third down conversions, they've been great. We saw some creative play calling. Look, you saw the Rosie Nix fullback dive. When have we seen a fullback dive? The answer is never. And so you saw the linebackers as Bell went out kind of sweep right, like he was going to get a toss sweep right. The linebackers all flowed with that, even though Rosie went fullback dive, quick hitter right up the middle. Nobody with them. Juju, say whatever you want, but that's you created a guy who you're not going to catch an easier touchdown pass, 4 or 6 in the red zone yesterday. The offense is where you want the offense to be. So, Todd, ball's in Todd's corner a little bit on the positive, and Ben's playing his best football. So I don't know. Let me ask you this, Dave. What are your latest thoughts on Martavis Bryant as him being a more productive part of this offense and seemingly a willingly more productive part of this offense?
First of all, you're spinning your wheels trying to heap praise on Todd Haley and get our listeners on board with any of that. all predictable, blah, blah, blah. A lot of you listen to this with no predictable for the bitch in the hind end. I hate to be blunt, but, like David and I say all the time, you could probably pick 8 or 10 plays out of every game that you watch on the boob tube and say, man, I wonder what the offensive coordinator was thinking there. It happens. And quite honestly, even at this point now, we don't know how many calls Todd Haley's making versus how many calls Ben is making. And rest assured that Ben has a lot of leeway when it comes to changing plays at the line of scrimmage there. So if you want to talk about actual play design, we could probably talk, because obviously they don't use a lot of switch routes. They don't do a lot of things that we see some of the new, maybe innovative young offensive coordinator minds do. So if you want to complain about anything with Todd Haley, maybe it's the overall design of plays. But look, we're talking too about a quarterback that, like Ben Roethlisberger, that how many times does a pass play design even matter?
Yeah.
Deep down inside, something tells me that this could be the final season for Todd Haley, regardless of how things end this season. Okay, your question about Martavis Bryant. David, he's still one-trick pony. I don't know how else to put it to you. He's a guy that can run slants and he can go deep. He can run. You can run the RPO with him in the screen situation and get 7, 8, 9 yards out of him that way as well too. I thought maybe he'd take maybe that next step this year, but it that just hasn't happened. He is a one-trick pony.
Yeah, Juju is a much more capable receiver right now than and that's, you know, Juju has developed into a quality NFL receiver in his rookie season at age 21 now. And it's been very impressive, I have to say. I mean, Juju's going to, you know, next week with one catch, he'll be at 50 yards. He's likely to be at 800 yards. You know, those are kind of the numbers that I thought Eli Rogers would have this year, 50 and 800. Very impressive to see Juju put up those type of numbers, you know, missing, you know, not doing a lot early in the season, missing a game with the suspension, missing a game with injury or two with injury, whatever it is. But he is the man. Juju's the man, and he's the Steelers' number two receiver. Depending, you know, in terms of what Ben looks at. So I don't have as strong a view as you that Martavis won't be back next year. But receiver will be a position of need. They will, again, you know, third round, fourth round, whatever it is, expect the Steelers to go back into the draft and continue to look for receivers.
Well, they're obviously not going to cut him outright, but you know, if you get the right trade situation there too during the draft, and you know, if the Steelers are to draft a wide receiver in 2018, I would expect it to be in that third to fourth round range, and I would expect it to be another height, weight,
bigger guy, yeah,
speed guy. You know, a guy that is. You know, looked at. I mean, one trick ponies aren't awful. You need them. You need guys that can take the top off the coverage. Having 4.3 speed is not a bad thing, especially when you're tall. So I think you could see, if they do draft another guy, that it be a tall, kind of a Mike Wallace to Martavis Bryant kind of clone, if you will. Just give us someone who can go deep and take the top off the coverage. A guy that has a high average. You know, I think they thought Sammy Coates maybe could be that guy as well.
Of course. They did, yeah.
You
yeah.
know, as well. And they obviously brought in Justin Hunter to be insurance to Martavis Bryant. You know, height, weight, size, speed guy as well too. You know, even if Martavis does return and is back with this team next season, you still might address that. You know,
I think they will. Yeah,
you know,
I think they will
in the draft. And look, if Martavis has a great 2018 season and a team wants to pay him number one wide receiver money, have at it. You know, because the Steelers will certainly take that compensatory pick. You know, as a result there. So I think they will draft another wide receiver, and I think it'll be a height, weight, size, speed. You know, type of guy on top of it. But in the meantime, I'm not expecting anything more out of Martavis than three catches, 60 yards, and maybe the occasional touchdown here.
Okay. Yeah. You know, the guy, Kenny Golladay, put him back in the draft next year at third round and see if the Steelers can, like the Lions did, 6'4", 213. That kind of, I'm with you. That would be the target. Because it's very unlikely that Justin Hunter is back next year. DHB's on his last leg. I mean, he doesn't get any run at wide receiver. Still does work on special teams, but at some point that's going to change in terms of how you manage your roster spots. Eli, who knows what the future holds for him. So, you know, wide receiver continue to have some turnover at that back end of the wide receiver position. Okay, we're getting up to time when Ben and Mike are going to speak here Tuesday morning. Dave, anything else out of the game or, you know, bigger picture that we missed?
Yeah, I think Sean Spence is your guy inside, right? I mean, I know we said we promised not to read too much into it about Tyler Matakavich potentially not getting snaps. He didn't get any snaps in that game against the Texans. LJ Fort and so Spence obviously got the lion's share along with Vince Williams. I think that's the way they roll the rest of the season here. And read into it what you want about Tyler Matakavich. Tyler Matakavich is a great special teams guy. He is a guy that can maybe fill in for you at more of the buck inside linebacker role, but I think it ends there. And quite honestly, I gotta be honest with you, that's the way I had Tyler Matakavich pegged the moment he was drafted. I don't see him being anything more than that. As long as he can play special teams, he'll still have a spot, I think, in the NFL. But I guess what I'm saying is I'll be surprised at this point, barring injury, if Sean Spence is not getting the lion's share of the carries or snaps beside Vince Williams.
I'll be surprised as well based on what we've seen again, you know, yesterday in terms of just, you know, for those who haven't seen the snap count up on Steelers Depot or wherever you find it. Jesse James had 32 snaps and Vance McDonald 29, Eli Rogers 27, just in terms of the, those numbers. Xavier Grimble had 14, Rosie had 16, Hubbard played some late, 18, DHP 13, Ridley 10, and then Justin Hunter 6, Fitz 5. On the defense, the guys, you know, the normal guys got most of the snaps. Cam got a little bit of a break along with Vince late, but Spence got 43, Mike Hilton 37 out of, this is out of 56. On offense, it was out of, I think, 61 total. William Gay 13, LJ Fort 13, LT Walton 7, Matakevich, as you said, none, Cam Sutton none. So you know that's worth, you know, throwing that part in. You know, more or less what we expect. Anthony Ciccolo 14, Tyson Alualu 17, Hargrave only 18 yesterday. That's a little bit interesting. I didn't realize that he was that few with you know, Texas didn't do anything. They threw completed 8 passes, I think.
Yeah, it was. I think they ran a lot of 3 wide receiver sets out there and all. All right, we'll analyze this a little bit more. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about
Nuke's catch.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that catch and him dragging Joe Hayden down in the process. We'll talk about the 12th man in New England, Al Riveron. We'll obviously try to have a Browns beat writer on to preview the best we can in 0-15 team and make that sound exciting like Mike Tomlin will try to do here in about an hour from now. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the show, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and hitting that donate button, upper right navigational bar as well. And David, until tomorrow.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.